Penguin Random House Audio presents The Search Party by Simon Lelich. Read for you by Ben Aragandade, Joe Gaminara, Fiona Button, Sasha Dewan, Jack Rowan, and Nicole Davies.
Emergency. Which service, please? Do you need fire, police, or ambulance?
I can't... Hello? Is anyone there?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank God. Please help us, please.
Can you tell me what happened?
Hello? She's gone. I can't...
I'm here. I can still hear you. Where are you?
I don't know. In the woods, somewhere. Please, we need an ambulance.
Right, an ambulance. Can you tell me where you are? Or what can you see?
Oh, God. Oh, God.
You're in the woods? Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. Near a building, a house.
A house, you say? Do you know the address?
There isn't one. It's empty, abandoned, but... Please, just come quickly. Please.
Day 6. D.I. Robin Fleet. The bloody rain. For 24 hours it had fallen, flaying the banks of the river with a tropical fervor. Except it was cold. Granted, the summer was officially over, but just 2 days ago the volunteers had been wearing shorts, while Fleet had stood sweating in his thinnest suit. Since the weather had broken, the water had struck like winter hail. Hard, pitiless, icy. A month's rainfall in barely a day, so they said. Fleet didn't know about climate change or all that, but he knew when something wasn't right. And this weather, it was freakish. As messed up as everything else that was going on in this town right now. He paused in the doorway of his hotel to light a cigarette, taking almost as much pleasure from the brief burst of warmth as he did from the nicotine itself. He exhaled a cloud of smoke that was immediately doused by the tumbling rain, then took two more drags and tossed the cigarette into the gutter, knowing it would be ruined anyway the moment he stepped into the torrent. "That's 50p down the drain right there," said a voice inside his head. His wife Holly's, unmistakably, and Fleet felt a pang from somewhere in his gut. It was like an ulcer, this constant twinge, and he hadn't yet found a way to stop it hurting. He thought of home. Was it raining like this there, he wondered, because it felt biblical, as if he were to get into his car and drive the 3 miles to the parish limits. Would he find himself confronting a ring of blue sky, a rainbow bridge to the world outside? You, heavens above, rain down my righteousness. What was that, Genesis? Isaiah? The quote came unbidden, as powerfully evocative as a familiar smell, and it made him want to light another cigarette. Detective Inspector Fleet, just as he'd been about to dash towards his company insignia, Fleet turned. It was the hotelier, a woman in her late 40s, to whom Fleet had taken an instant dislike on first meeting her, only to later reverse his opinion completely. She dressed primly, rarely smiled, and wore her hair in a skin-stretching bun. Fleet had marked her down as yet another disapproving gossip, in a town with far more than its fair share. But she'd proved discreet, generous, and obliquely loyal. In many ways, she was the closest thing Fleet had in this town to a friend. "There's a call for you," said Anne, as she pointed over her left shoulder. Her expression was apologetic. She was familiar enough now with Fleet's business to know the news he received was never good. Fleet checked the screen of his mobile. There were no missed calls, but there was also no reception. The entire town was pocked with dead spots, which seemed as appropriate an analogy as any. He followed Anne back inside. The hotel wasn't luxurious, but it was a luxury. Fleet lived only an hour or so along the coast, but rather than traveling back and forth, he'd taken a room here, at the Harbour View Hotel. For convenience, he'd told himself. The Harbour View was no more or less than your typical seaside B&B, and Fleet might have picked any one of the dozen or so guest houses that were clustered beside the harbour. All would have had space, and Anne was the only thing that set this one apart. She cleaned his room, fried his breakfast, and now fielded his calls. She did so much, it made Fleet feel guilty, to the extent he started making his own bed. Not that he used it much anyway. Most nights since checking in under just a week ago, he'd sat up gazing at the harbour, imagining what might be hidden beneath the water. Anne showed him to the little office behind the reception counter and gestured to the receiver lying unhooked on the desk. She nodded when Fleet offered his thanks and then closed the glass door to give him some privacy. "Robin Fleet," he announced into the receiver. "Boss, it's Nicky." The line was poor. The reception wherever Nicky was clearly only a fraction better than it was in the black spot that covered the area around the harbour. "What's up, Nicky? I was just on my way to the river." Detective Sergeant Nicola Collins took a breath. Even through the crackle, she sounded excited about something. "We found them," she said. Fleet straightened. "You did? When?" "Just now. And Rob? Brace yourself. It's a fucking shit show." So much for the Rainbow Bridge. Fleet had to follow the river inland to get to where he was heading, passing the current search site on the way. And though something inside him lifted when he reached the final dilapidated houses of the town itself, the clouds did not. The sky was grey to the end of the world, and on the roof of the Fleet's car, the rain persisted with its relentless beat. As the last few buildings disappeared from his rearview mirror, Fleet found himself in countryside. The forest thickened, obscuring the river. And although Fleet remembered the area far better than he would have liked, he twice took a wrong turning. He blamed the sat-nav, which was insistent that he should cut across a field. He switched it off, turned up the radio, the local station, playing modern pop tunes, teenage stuff, until he dialed to something classical instead, and relied on memory, together with the directions Nicky had given him at the end of their patchy phone call. It took him half an hour longer than he'd expected, and in the end even the radio signal gave out. Had they really come this far, this deep inland? The Insignia wasn't built for country lanes, even less for muddy fields, so he had to park it short of the pair of police Land Rovers. Nicky was waiting for him, wellied and dripping. Somehow, though, DS Nicola Collins always managed to look like she was fresh from a good night's sleep and her second cup of coffee. It was those frost-blue eyes of hers, clear and crisp against the frame of her short black hair. Also, she was young, 26, 27, a decade younger than Fleet, and Fleet's true age, he always felt, was his own, plus the number of cigarettes he'd smoked that day. But what Fleet had mistaken for excitement in Nicky's voice when he'd spoken to her on the phone was something else, he quickly realized. It was adrenaline, yes, but Fleet could see she was rattled. And D.S. Collins didn't rattle easily. "Boss," she said in greeting. She looked down at his shoes, which were already sinking into the mud. Fleet flipped the hood of his anorak over his head. "You can always give me a piggyback if I get stuck," he said. Fleet was 6'3" and at least 15 kilos overweight. Nicky was trimmer than a greyhound and weighed about as much. Even so, Fleet had no doubt she could have managed it. She was tenacious as hell, which was part of the reason he'd given this particular
sample complete. Ready to continue?